Good morning to your friends. I'm Adrian Flannelly, and we're coming to you from New York. And you may have indeed been listening to Irish Radio Network USA, irishradio.com, for the past hour, in which case you'll already know that our program starts at 9 o'clock on Saturday mornings here, the first hour coming from Glucksman Ireland House at New York University. It is hosted by Dr. Miriam Nyhan Gray. And indeed, this morning, for instance, it's by the way, it's a great, really a great program, and we're very happy with our association with Glucksman Ireland House, and indeed with Dr. Miriam Nyhan Gray. This morning, you know, this to mark Black History Month, with you know, kickstart of the month, which Miriam indeed went to the archives and got a lecture. It's about 10 years ago. It was a lecture, a Nerney O'Malley lecture, by Professor Angela F. Murphy on the abolitionist memories of Daniel O'Connell in the United States. And so we're going to be with you for the next couple of hours. Hopefully you'll be able to spend that time with us. But if for some reason you can't listen to us live, all of our interviews are archived. The entire program from Glucksman Ireland House is, and our interviews are archived, and anywhere at your own time you can log on to irishradio.com. Now, we're going to take our microphone to Ireland to catch up with Brian Warfield. And Brian, he's the leader of the Wolfstones, noted composer, an Irish historian, an author, a playwright, and he founded the Wolfstones in Inchicore in Dublin, 1963. So almost 60 years later, the Wolfstones are still, of course, probably the most significant and well supported group in Ireland. For instance, last year, in Belfast at Féile Fóibil, they drew 15,000 people. Now, that's at the height of the pandemic, so they must be doing something right. This year is the 175th commemoration of the Great Irish Famine, and the Wolfstones are performing two special concerts, and only two, in New York on March 15th and 16th, and that's at Town Hall in New York, and again, to commemorate on Gorta Mór, Ireland's Great Hunger. And so we're looking forward to linking up there with Brian Warfield and the Wolfstones. Now, another dub on our program this morning, Ciara Ní Chuaigh, an Irish writer and a playwright. She's from Dublin, but she's based in New York since 2013. She has had a slew of international award-winning plays, developed with various theatres in Ireland and obviously in the US. But her new play, Made by God, is loosely based on the tragic true life story of Anne Lovett. Anne Lovett, a 15-year-old schoolgirl from Granard in County Longford, died giving birth beside a grotto on January 31st, 1984, in the depth of the winter, and her baby son died at the same time, and the story of her death played a huge part in a seminal national debate on women giving birth outside of marriage. The play will have its run during February, March at the Irish Repertory Theatre, irishrep.org. You can get more information opening on February 17th. We'll have, as we have each week, updated news, sports, from Ireland with the award-winning author and journalist Kevin O'Connor. Sponsored by Tourism Ireland. Did I tell you about Tourism Ireland? Okay, I'm sure you've probably heard of it somewhere indirectly, hopefully, in this program. Ireland.com. That is the Bible we refer to for travel to Ireland and hundreds of reasons why that's a good idea, particularly at this point now. Ireland, the most the country of Europe, hailed for the biggest vaccination rate. In terms of if you're going anywhere and you're landing anywhere, check out Ireland, and the time is now. Ireland.com. Now, CIE Tours welcomes travellers. It's the premium tour operator for Ireland and Britain vacations. And guess what? How old are they? 90 years. 90 years. So I'd say they have the hang of it by now. That website is www.cietours.com. Best way to reach us, you could drop an email at any point to Áine, as in Áine Sheridan, the president of Flannelly Promotions and Irish Radio Network, and of course the Flannelly Show. And so her easiest way to reach us and her, send an email to Áine@irishradio.com. That is Áine@irishradio.com. When we get the news from Ireland, we perhaps dig into and get some in-depth insight into what is one more time a threat to peace and stability in Northern Ireland when the First Minister decided to step down. And of course the domino effect is that Vice Minister, but you get the drift anyway. That forces, of course, the partner Sinn Féin to step down as well. So we have one more disastrous event from Northern Ireland that they know. No leadership, no anything in the midst of a terrific, I should say, horrific time when Brexit and the protocol in Northern Ireland, on which the possibility, if not probability, of a hard border returning, which again would be in total violation of the Good Friday Agreement. Now, again, up in the air. You know, you want to talk about stubbornness, thickness? It's all there, but it's awful, and it's something that, you know, the Irish government and the leadership of the Irish government are basically frustrated but doing their best to get it back on track. Okay, friends, music? Yeah. Plenty of it coming your way. Here is a, we might start off though with singer Finbar Wright from Ireland. And the song we're about to hear is about as old as any of us, and it is called Trotting to the Fair, the Flannelly Show coming to you live from New York City. Again. We're going to take some Celtic orchestral music, yes, and for that, well, I'm sure you'll recognize the song, it's The Rose of Tralee, and this comes from an album called Celtic Moods. Thank you. whole East Coast, indeed from Mexico up to Maine, hit with a wicked storm. Not so much snow as ice, black ice, and dangerous driving and all the rest. I wish I had better news, you know, to tell you about the weather. And we might have to wait for Kevin O'Connor to bring us news on the sports from Ireland. Nobody gets a better kick, you know, out of the one-upmanship of Kevin O'Connor, you know. We're here freezing. You wouldn't want to stop to talk to anybody on the sidewalks, you know, of New York, because one of you might wind up on the other side of the street. Hey, Kevin O'Connor, come on. And, oh, it's 40 degrees, it's 50 degrees, and sunny, and what? Excuse me. But he loves it, given the dig. You know what I mean? Yeah. All right. Padder O'Reada. And, well, he's going to give us a few reels. And starting with the ships are sailing. Okay. By the way, this features the concertina. And, yes, that soul is there in, the background. If that sounds like spoons, two spoons in the drawer, that's what it is. Very special talent. You know, again, only given to a few. Here, you know, to let you know that, yes, irishradio.com, you know, live or archived, and Facebook, on Facebook, it's Adrian Flannelly, okay, you can tune into either, and good lad yourself there, Padder O'Reada, and friends, you, indeed, are listening to irishradio.com worldwide. And the intro of the program, I told you about the Wolf Tones, and they're coming to New York on the 15th and 16th of March. You know, if you're of the opinion that you're time enough now with that show, that's ages away. No, excuse me. 6-7 weeks. Yeah. Better get ready for that one. But it is indeed to commemorate the Irish famine and the significance of 170th anniversary. We're delighted the Wolf Tones are coming and dedicating their concert, their performance to the Irish hunger. We're listening to Celtic Symphony by Dwarf Tones.
It was far across the sea when the devil got a hold of me. He wouldn't set me free, so he kept me still for ransom. La 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 la. I'm a sailor man from Glasgow town. I've roamed this world around and round. He's the meanest thing that I had found in all my days of wandering. La 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 la. Was then he took me by surprise. Take me to your paradise. I want to see the jungle. La 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 la. Here we go again. We're on the road again. We're on the road again. We're on our way to paradise. We love the jungle tea. That's where the lions see. For then those evil eyes, they have no place in paradise.
Graffiti on the wall, just as the sun was going down. I see graffiti on the wall.
Of the self, of the self.
Graffiti on the wall, it says we're magic, we're magic. Graffiti on the wall.
Graffiti on the wall.
Jungle deep, for the paradise that we did seek was no trip for the weak. There was one with the natives.
Na 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 na.
From the Amazon to Borneo, from Africa to Tokyo, to the darkest jungles of the world, but nowhere could I lose them.
Na 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 na.
Day. I think you're leading me astray. I want your soul, me pal.
Na 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 na. Here we go again. We're on the road again. We're on the road again. We're on our way to paradise. We love the jungle. That's where the lions sleep. For then those evil lions, they have no place in paradise.
Graffiti on the wall, just as the sun was going down. I see graffiti on the wall.
Of the selves, of the selves.
Graffiti on the wall, it says we're magic, we're magic. Graffiti on the wall.
Graffiti on the wall.
It says ooh ah
of the rat, say ooh ah of the rat. Ooh ah of the rat, say ooh ah of the rat. Ooh ah of the rat, say ooh ah of the rat. Ooh ah of the rat, say ooh ah of the rat. Ooh ah of the rat, say ooh ah of the rat. Ooh ah of the rat, say ooh ah of the rat.
Yeah. You know, it's exciting, and of course, any commemoration for Ireland's great famine, Ireland's great hunger, is indeed it's appropriate to commemorate this in the 175th commemoration again. Now, Brian Warfield, you know, is, and the wolf tones do indeed tell the story through their music and song, and you know, they're a favorite of Irish people. By the way, again, I want to let you know that it's the 15th and 16th of March at Town Hall, and again to commemorate on Gartamore, the Irish famine. You can get tickets indeed by going to Town Hall in New York City, and tickets can also be bought, by the way, at Ticketmaster.com, and this is going to be a sellout. Remember, now where you heard it. Okay, it is going to sell out. But Brian Warfield, indeed, is an historian. We all know him as the founder of the Wolf Tones, but he is a historian, and in his quest to ensure that the, you know, cataclysmic event is not relegated to the ash heap of history, Brian has written beautiful songs and music which highlight the unnecessary pain, suffering, and death inflicted, you know, on the impoverished Irish people by the then British government. And, you know, this history will record it. This, of course, is our Irish genocide. And, friends, we have, we're almost at the point where we're going to welcome our first guest today, but who is Kieran Quirk. But anyway, that'll be in a few minutes from now. And you are listening to The Flannelly Show live from New York. Okay, here's the song. It's by the Celtic Sisters, and it's called Short a Penny.
A penny can make all the difference when the cost of your love is a pound. I'm standing here with my 99 pence, short a penny, please don't let me down. Did I spend it by being the selfish one and not playing games in the dark, ignoring your touch and refusing to talk, or walk hand in hand through the park? A penny can make all the difference when the cost of your love is a pound. I'm standing here with my 99 pence, short a penny, please don't let me down. The sale this week was on jealousy. I queued and I bought the whole lot. First the cash, then the credit cards paid for it, but the penny in change I forgot. I who forgave, now I'm asking you to lend back the penny I need. A penny can make all the difference when the cost of your love is a pound. I'm standing here with my 99 pence, short a penny, please don't let me down. Yes, I'm standing here with my 99 pence short of pay. Please don't let me die.
That reference there to 99 pennies takes us back, you know, to a different day when Ireland was dealing in pounds, shillings, and pence. So 100 pennies in made a pound. Okay, I want to welcome Ciara Ní Quirc, and she's an Irish writer, playwright, young one. Came here some 8 years ago at age 23, she already had, a lot of experience and a lot of, notoriety in terms of her plays. Writes a lot about immigration, but her newest play. Oh, by the way, I think we've found her on the phone line here.
Yes, hey. I'm here. Hi, Adrian.
Hi, how are you doing? Okay.
I'm good.
So take us back to, again, to 2013. You were doing very well in Ireland. You, again, had made tremendous headway already as a writer, as a playwright. So what got into you to leave it all behind and come to New York?
Yeah, I don't know. I always had wanted to live in New York. And right after I graduated from Trinity in 2012, I kind of fell straight into working in Ireland. But the whole time, New York was kind of in the back of my head. And up to a year after you graduate in Ireland, you can get a visa to come to New York for a year. Mm-hmm. So just once I was getting towards the end of that year, I felt like that deadline was looming. And I said, look, I'll go. I'll see how it goes. If it's terrible, I can always come back to Ireland. But it's worked out. I've been here 8 years.
Now, you became an American citizen there a couple of years back. And how do you reconcile your Irishness with your Americanness, so to speak?
I don't know. It's kind of a weird one because I've been here. I mean, now I technically am an American. And I don't know. I feel like it's something I'm constantly struggling with, basically. And especially when I'm writing about it, because I spent a long time writing plays that were about America and set in America, and then ended up writing this play, Made by God, which is set in Ireland and about Ireland. And it felt, I feel more distance from Ireland writing it, almost, even though I'm writing it as an Irish woman.
The play, which is opening on the 17th, your world premiere, is called Made by God, at the Irish Repertory Theatre, again, opening on the 17th. It's a play, really, that many will say, you know, it brings back a tragic story. One, from not that long ago. But it was one that made a huge difference in the seminal national debate on women giving birth outside marriage. Now, it's not a biopic, or is it?
No, it isn't. I feel like when I was writing the early drafts of it, I was trying to write a biopic, but I kept running into a wall of just, no one really knows why Anne Lovett did what she did. And by inventing kind of a fictionalized story around it, it's about an American podcaster who goes to Ireland to make a podcast about the Anne Lovett story. I was able kind of to access it more because I felt like I wasn't forcing my perspective on it, and I wasn't trying to say, here's why Anne Lovett did what she did. I was able to use other characters and say there's multiple theories about why she did what she did, and ultimately we don't really know.
Yeah, but it doesn't take away from the fact that, you know, pregnancy and birth of a baby outside of marriage, you know, in Ireland at that time, you know, was scandalous, it was shameful, it was everything. But I think it did wake up Ireland.
Yeah.
And it brought about something that, you know, that has resulted. And how did that play into, you know, when you were writing this, about what is a very hot topic in the United States, and one, you know, that you know, pro-choice, you know, pro-life debate is so relevant in the United States right now. Was, you know, with the Roe versus Wade, you know, from the Irish context, tell us, you know, with the referendum on the Eighth Amendment in
I think
very recent history.
Yeah. And yeah, it's interesting being here and seeing how people debate abortion here, because it is very much about pro-life versus pro-choice. But I think really what it's about is whether abortion should be legal. And I think it doesn't really matter if you're pro-life or pro-choice, because if it's legal, that doesn't make it mandatory. Like, that's my perspective on it. And you can still be pro-life. You only have to get an abortion if you want to. But it is such a complicated thing. And definitely in Ireland, during the referendum, it just got so vicious between the two sides.
Mm.
And I feel like that's kind of what's starting to happen here as well.
Yeah. Now, it was, you know, it was a shock to a lot of us, and indeed to Irish Americans in particular, and to those that Ireland, the island of saints and scholars, would come to the fore. You know, in the debate, not only in the debate, but the referendum, you know, pretty much, you know, set a standard not accepted, you know, pretty much anywhere in Europe, or for that matter, you know, in the Western Hemisphere. How did that influence, how did you interpret that that particular thorny issue, and relate that to what was going on here?
So the play is set in 2018, before the referendum in Ireland. So, I mean, the two main characters are an American woman and an Irish man who have very different views on the referendum. So I feel like that's how it relates to the debate here, because it is the same debate, really. I mean, there isn't a referendum coming up here, but, you know, the Supreme Court are going to make a decision in May that could get rid of Roe v. Wade. So I feel like a lot of people are having these conversations now.
Mm. Now, tell us, actually, as you see it, the story of and love it. Some of us are, some of us, particularly those who are a bit long on the tooth, will remember the horrific story, the mystery of Anne Lovett. She was 15.
Yeah, she's 15, and on January 31st, 1984, she was full-term pregnant, and she went to the Grotto of Our Lady in Granard, which is in Longford, and gave birth outdoors, and she and the baby died. And ever since it happened, the whole town, everyone has denied that they knew she was pregnant. They've denied knowing anything about it, and they've always refused to speak about it.
If you examine that, how, you know, one of the questions that arises, you know, starting backwards, working backwards, as, all right, so who's the father? How did this happen? Was that an issue, or was the tragic event itself, did that overshadow, you know, any of the investigations, as far as you know?
As far as I know, they've never confirmed who was the father. They don't know. They never did a DNA test on the baby. And with the play, I try, especially when dealing with Anne's part of the story, I try to just use the facts for that. And it's the fictionalized characters who have opinions on that. But, yeah, it's always been shrouded in mystery. And it's just, I guess that's why I'm fascinated with it. And I think a lot of people are, too, because of that. We just don't know.
Yeah. So it begins on the 17th of March. It is the world premiere. And how do you think, for instance, that those who are, you know, now experiencing and getting wrapped in your play will be, you know, be able to reconcile that with their own either fears or doubts or again, particularly since the story seems to be tied into the whole issue of pro-choice and or not. How do you leave us with more questions than answers?
I mean, hopefully it makes people question their own beliefs and how they interact with other people. That's the ideal. But I feel like what I'm trying to leave people with is that I feel, especially in America, because there's two huge political parties and people are very siloed by them, I think you have to be very resolved in certain beliefs. But I do think we need to do a better job of trying to understand the other side. And I think that's ultimately what the play is about.
Mm-hmm.
Two people who are on these extremes who come to a kind of understanding between each other.
Yeah. And again, you know, you do point out that, again, with the referendum in Ireland, it wasn't as if this was slid, you know, under, you know, just a decision that was there with fierce opposition. And indeed, you know, again, because it wasn't, you know, it brought in again the separation of church and state, and God knows we know plenty about that here.
Yeah.
Were you in Ireland at that time? I'm kind of getting foggy about when.
No, I wasn't in Ireland, but it just was so, you know, it was the only thing people were talking about. Me and my friends were talking about, so it just felt like it was all you could think about for months.
Yeah. Would the reaction be, let's say, could you fit the reaction to that into general age groups, the older people who, you know, in aging, people who, you know, people like myself, who would say, we never thought we'd see the day, or who thought for a minute that this could ever happen in Holy Ireland? And for that matter, when you relate that to what was going on here, the Roe versus Wade, the threat to that, and it is a real threat as to the outcome of that. Similarities?
I think it's interesting because, you know, Roe versus Wade just had its 49th anniversary, so I feel like we're a whole generation removed from Roe, whereas in Ireland, you know, like, Savita Halappanavar died in my lifetime, and there was these stories of women dying because they were denied abortions that were such recent history. Whereas here, I feel like there's no recent history like that. So people are more removed from it, and that's why this is happening, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Well, it'll be interesting. And if we go by any reviews, you know, or critical, the critics seem to have great joy in giving you credit for the variety of plays that you have, that you're responsible for. Tell us a little bit about, though, when you're here, and for instance, developing your plays with various theaters, but coming here to New York and the Philadelphia University of the Arts Dublin Festival. You have play, of course, at the Origin Theatre Company, and then a return to the Irish Rep in New York. What is the difference as a writer, as somebody who's perfected the art of writing through the highest levels of education, specifically, geared to, help along the art? What did you find overall on the changes, or was it pretty much the same,
I definitely think in doing an MFA it really helped me, like, just become a better writer, and really, I feel like the MFA was very focused on structure and, like, what makes a good play, and, yeah, it's also, I think, the fellow students as well. I just had a really good cohort who were able to give me wonderful notes, and we were all able to support each other, but I think it depends on the person and depends on the class.
Yeah. Again, we're delighted, of course, that you are being here. Now, your experience in Columbia University and your further education, are you nearly finished with that, or is this something that is so ongoing that you're glued,
I think I'm nearly finished. I love, like, classes and taking part in workshops and labs and things like that, so I always jump at opportunities like that, but I also feel like I'm never going to be a perfect writer, I'm always going to be refining it and working on my craft, as they say.
Yeah, well, okay, it's a... that brings us back to the Irishness of self-praise is no praise. But anyway, let me tell you, we are looking forward to having, and seeing your world premiere of Made by God again from the 17th of February at the Irish Repertory Theatre, irishrep.org, telephone number 727-727-2737, is it? Okay. The old touch now is catching up with me. Listen, good luck to you, and we're looking forward, indeed, to meeting you in person and seeing you're all about. Okay. Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network USA. A brilliant writer and playwright there in the person of Ciara Ní Quirc. All right, Brendan Boy, raring to go, okay, with this tune and song called The Swallow on Irish Radio Network. You can say irishradio.com, worldwide, The Flannelly Show from New York. Wallow.
The swallow now is feeding for warmer tides and sun-rich orange shores, while cooler breezes tell of summer fading. My heart with you into the heavens.
Wow. I want to dedicate this next song here to Dr. Louis Byrne, a cousin of mine. This is his favorite song. I'm not too sure that he would like this particular version of it, because I tell you what, he does the version as one might hear it, you know, in a thatched house by the fire. But anyway, we won't be getting that from Arcady, the group here, and from an album called A Celtic Tapestry. Again, the Rocks of Bourne.
Come home, you loyal heroes, wherever you may be. Don't hire without a master till you know what your work will be. For you must rise up early from the clear daylight till or else he won't be able to plow the rocks upon. My cart's a 10-year sweet, you have me nearly wrong. You're sitting by the fireside with your duty. Sitting by the fireside from the clear daylight till dawn, I'm afraid you won't be able to plow the rocks.
Song there, and again, Louis does the Chanos version of that song. Anyway, we'd settle for that one for now. Anyway, Dougie McLean here from Celtic Tide, and the song Caledonia, program The Flannelly Show, live from New York. Yes, IrishRadio.com, worldwide.
You can see the changes that have come over me in these last few days. I've been afraid
And we're going to link up with our friend, our colleague, our journalist, author, and indeed author of a new book that's still flying off the shelves, Political Betrayal. It's written by Kevin O'Connor here, and it's how Charlie Haughey acquired €70 million. You're welcome there, my friend.
Thank you for that. Yes, there's no betrayal from the Irish rugby team today. They've got 4 minutes to go, and they're leading by 29 points to nil.
Woohoo!
Yes, we are. And Wales were the holders of the Six Nations Championship, but Ireland have given them a drubbing, certainly. After 2 minutes, they got a try, and then they converted by Johnny Sexton, of course, and then two tries from Andrew Conway, another one from Ringrose, the centre, and they're just playing superb rugby. This is the Irish team now that beat the All Blacks there last November. And also beat Japan. So
they're on a roll.
We're certainly on a roll. On the news front, the Taoiseach, deeply concerned by the DUP resignation, as British government calls on the Ulster Party to reinstate their first minister. Golfgate case dismissed against four defendants. Dublin Airport expects 7.4 million to fly out of Ireland this year, and Ireland dominate BAFTA awards. These were the main stories. As I said, Ireland opened brilliantly against Wales. Newcap Australian-born winger Mac Hansen, who now plays for Connacht, and he's here for the last 6 months, he made an excellent start with a strong line break down the left, and from the ruck, the ball was whipped out to Bundy Aki, who touched down in the corner. That was just after 2 minutes. Tries subsequently from two tries from Andrew Conway, and then a marvellous break by Ringrose, the centre, for the fourth try. Johnny Sexton converted two or three of them. So that's the situation there on the news front. The Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, has said he's deeply concerned about the resignation of DUP First Minister Paul Gavin, saying it is very damaging move by the DUP. Parties in Northern Ireland have called for an early election to take place after Stormont was plunged into a fresh power-sharing crisis. The move by Mr. Gavin is part of the DUP's escalating protest strategy against Brexit, its Northern Ireland Irish Sea border situation. It comes after DUP Agriculture Minister Edwin Poots ordered his officials to cease carrying out agri-food checks at Northern Ireland ports. DUP leader Geoffrey Donaldson said the DUP will not allow Northern Ireland to be consigned to second best. And the British government, meanwhile, has expressed disappointment at Paul Given's resignation and called on the DUP to reinstate a First Minister to the Northern Ireland Executive immediately. Northern Secretary Brandon Lewis said he would talk to the Irish government and all the parties in Northern Ireland in an effort to prevent a return to political deadlock. Remember the last time there were 3 years without an executive in the north of Ireland. The long-running controversy over the so-called Golfgate event in Clifton in County Galway in August 2020 came to a dramatic conclusion this week when charges against four men accused of breaching pandemic restrictions were dismissed. Former Senator Donny Cassidy, Independent Galway West TD Noel Grealish, and John and James Sweeney of the Station House Hotel in Clifton were charged with organising or causing to be organised an event that was in breach of emergency pandemic legislation. At the end of the three-day trial at Galway District Court, Judge Mary Fahey ruled that two distinct events had occurred, each on either side of the partition, and there had been no breach. I'm satisfied, she said, the organisers did everything to comply, not in court of public opinion, but in the court of law, in my opinion. Unfortunately, very good people lost very good jobs and very good contracts. And just to clarify, I didn't make my decision based on that. I'm dismissing the charges against all four defendants. And now, if you remember, Dara Cleary, the agriculture minister, he resigned after that. And now the Taoiseach has said the door is open for the agriculture minister to return to the cabinet, according to Micheál Martin, who was speaking after all charges were dismissed. Mr. Cleary, the Mayo Fianna Fáil TD, resigned as a minister after his emergency attended the Oireachtas party. His party leader said Mr. Cleary paid a very high, heavy price and that there was always a way back for the TD when asked if he would return to the cabinet. No mention at all of Phil Hogan, the Euro Commissioner, who also resigned a couple of days after Dara Cleary. So there doesn't appear to be any way back for the Euro Commissioner. Of course, his job is filled in the meantime. But who knows? Will he now look at his legal option?
Yeah.
Who knows? You know, Possibly.
Yeah. More mayhem in the making there. Really raw, because rule you bull you. Yeah.
It's fairly raw, the whole thing, yeah. But Dublin Airport expects about 70% of the record 33 million passengers that passed through there in 2019 to use the facility this year, figures show. Forecasts in the document show that it expects 7.45 million passengers to fly out of the terminal this year against 10.25 million in 2019. That will rise to 8.4 million next year, reaching 10 million in 2025 and 10.25 million the year after. The projections for the final 2 years, detailed in the document, are in line with DAA's own position that air travel will recover to pre-COVID levels in 2025. Noel Tracy, the former Fianna Fáil TD for Galway East and Minister of State in several administrations, died this week at the age of 70. Mr. Tracy served as a TD for almost three decades, first winning a seat at a by-election in 1982, and also the great rugby player Tom Kiernan, who captained Ireland for several years. He died yesterday at the age of 83. And as the honorary free woman of Limerick, Vicky Phelan, said she hoped her legacy would be to encourage people, particularly women, to stand up for themselves when it came to their right to proper healthcare. The Kilkenny native, who was awarded the Freedom of Limerick by Limerick City and County Council this week, was honoured for exposing the cervical check scandal throughout Ireland. Kevin O'Connor in Longwood, the game is over and we've won 29 points to nil.
Again, wow. Okay.
The reigning champions of Europe. That's
yeah.
Wales.
Boy.
So,
celebrations in the works there, and drink will be had.
Yes.
That's incredible. So what's the next now? What's the next major move there?
Rugby. We're playing, I think, Scotland in 2 weeks' time. And of course, we've two away matches. England is away and France are away. They'll be tough ones to crack. Being performed so well, four tries, you know, and scoring after 2 minutes, you know, there was no doubt at all about it.
Yeah.
This is a revitalized outside. Farrell, the trainer, has certainly got them playing very, very quick, fast rugby, and they dominate the play, and their running is so good, and their rugby, they're playing throughout the game, actually, from the first half to the second half, was very, very good.
Okay. And, of course, you're no stranger to rugby either. It kind of brings you back to a time.
No, it brings me back to Tom Kiernan.
Yeah.
I was on a Munster Schools team that Tom Kiernan was only a sub. So that's my claim to fame. I made the team where he was only a sub at the time.
Wow.
He was a year younger than me, so I can't say anything about that.
Yeah.
But,
so you left him. You left him carrying the Ganges. Yeah.
Time in 1978 when Munster defeated the South Africans. Sorry, the New Zealanders by 12 points to nil.
Mm.
And the New Zealanders were lucky to get nil that day.
Yeah.
Not that bad.
Wow.
So overwhelming.
Okay.
That was in October in 70 years.
Kevin, again, we can't fathom or let the topic go about what many will feel is the stupidity of the collapse of the Northern Ireland executive at a time when you know, it would appear anyway that the First Minister, you know, and the DUP can't get along with themselves, much less with anybody else at a crucial time when the threat of the return of a hard border in Ireland. Give us a little bit of your own interpretation of what the hell this is going on.
They basically say, you either play the game according to us, or we won't play with you. It's as simple as that. You know, they're just doing their own crazy stints here now. As I remember the last time, 3 years waiting for an executive right. in the North. It means all the people in the north of Ireland can't get on with running their country properly.
Yeah.
When they're behaving like kamikaze pilots in Japan, you know.
Yeah.
Just kamikaze. They're ruining things for themselves and for the whole country. And of course, the Sinn Féin had to resign as well because they pulled the plug on the whole situation.
Mm.
So it's mind-boggling. You can't understand the logic of it at all.
And could what is the correlation between, say, with we know that the DUP in Northern Ireland, you know, that they're hardly great partners for Sinn Féin, but would any of this have to do with, you know, the one-upmanship?
In the last opinion polls, the Sinn Féin were 8 points ahead of the DUP.
Mm.
So it's not looking good for the DUP, and they're just trying desperate measures to see if they can get the support of the general public for it. But there are elections due anyway in May. Whether this will go on until then, nobody knows. But Sinn Féin have the run on them now, so like in the north of Ireland, by 8 points. That's a considerable lead they're winning.
On top of the peculiar timing of their stepping down and, you know, acting the aegis, is there is some of this having to do with, you know, the up your boy for, you know, to try to, you know, change the image of Sinn Féin and to put them on the, slow them down a bit? Or is this strictly and purely, you know, the DUP's own stirring the pot because of a very serious issue? Which, is there a bit of that too?
Brexit, yes. It is. They are certainly trying to stir the pot. It's not going for them in the north. And the British government haven't given them any time either, actually, in the last couple of months. So everybody's, apparently, according to them, they're all against, everybody's against them in the north of Ireland. So they're trying their own way to run the country.
Well, the sulking strategy rarely works, but I mean, talk about shooting yourself in the foot. This is,
they have to realize that all parties in the north have to work together.
Mm.
It's the only way, and that's what the legislation is saying. There's no other way out of it.
Yeah.
So the strategy is very hard to understand, really.
Yeah, and you know, it's almost again like. Whether that's rugby or Gaelic football or whatever, if if there are two teams on the field and one of them feels they're going to lose anyway, you know, they walk off the field. There's no head nor tail to it, honestly, I think. And that's how most people feel. What do you think? The call from the Taoiseach, the north-south relationship, this is not doing any good, you know, at a time when British Prime Minister, Boris is, he's becoming, he's dragging.
He's the joke now.
Yeah.
Prime Minister, and it's a question of when is he going to resign, and how long will he last? That's the big question over there.
Yeah. Grasping at straws too, from his fingernails at the edge of the cliff. But in the meantime, to represent the Brits as some kind of a laughing stock, that can't be helpful when the Brexit issue is so raw. But anyway, we have enough of our own troubles. And again, on a positive note, what a great win again today, Ireland versus Wales.
I must say, no, I didn't see it coming. The bookies had Ireland minus 14,
right,
which meant they had to win 15 or more, and I didn't fancy them then. But they won by 29, so who am I to understand the Irish rugby team?
Yeah.
The vagaries of the Irish team. Particularly, of course, we should have realised what a fantastic performance against the All Blacks.
Yeah.
And again, that fan. They were the last two matches. And this is practically the Leinster team playing for Ireland.
Yeah.
I think there's, 12 of the Leinster team on this Irish side.
Great.
With, two from Connacht and two from Munster. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Four.
Okay. All right, great stuff. Okay, thank you, Kevin O'Connor. They're bringing us news and sports from Ireland. And, that's great news. I think our upcoming guest on the program, Brian Warfield, but he's watching. He what?
Celebrating.
Oh, he's celebrating already? Mm-hmm. Okay, take it easy, Brian, now, because we'll be talking to you soon. And I have one or two, I suppose, wouldn't hurt. In the meantime, friends, let's go to Roscommon at the invitation of Tracy and Ed O'Brien and their neighbour, Seamus Shannon, of great fame. And here from the magic of Seamus Shannon is, a couple of reels. It's an Annaly Show live from New York. Irish Radio Network USA and irishradio.com worldwide. It's real here. Seamus Shannon. friends, and now the song coming up here, I think, well, let's put it this way. If you don't recognize this song, you know, chances are you're too young to be listening to this program anyway. Okay. Made famous by Doris Day. And Breen.
When I was just a little girl, I asked my mother, what would I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich? Here's what she said to me.
Back and again, I was really only slagging, kidding, when I said if you didn't recognize that song, you know, you're too young to listen to this program. Hey, we can't afford to lose you, okay? And your mother and your grandmother, if they were listening to this program, okay, don't you, you know, get yourself, you know, in a tizzy with that one. We don't want to lose any listeners at all, at all. You know, there is a great celebration going on, and now that we're ready to take off again safely and make that trip to Ireland, CIE Tours. CIE Tours is, of course, celebrating 90 years. With 90 years experience. That is some track record, let me tell you. You tours throughout Ireland, throughout Britain, back on board, okay? And again, you can log on to, CIETours.com, or indeed the best number to call, and it's worth your while making that call, making that personal contact with CIE, because that's what they do best. They'll set you straight. 1-800-243-BEST. Wait a minute now. It's 243-8687. That makes it a bit easier. Yeah. You should really, well, you can, actually they have a new brochure now for 2022. And no trouble at all in getting a lot of information there. But, yeah, but at the end of the day, I'll give you a tip. Call them. 1-800-243-8687. Or at least get, you know, a full lineup of the options that you have. Oh, and there's, what is it? Oh, okay, there's a huge discount going on at the moment. That's only for the next few days. CIE Tours celebrating 90 years of service. The tour company that knows Ireland inside out and again Britain. So log on to it there and get the information. Okay. There are so many songs made popular by the Wolf Tones, and by way of introduction to our next guest, if he can tear himself away from celebrating the great rugby success of Ireland versus Wales today, we'll be talking now to Brian Warfield in a couple of minutes. This is one of their greatest songs.
End of London, I met an old man. He kept a bar called the Horses and Tram. My parents were Irish, they loved that dear land. The Cockney, he smiled and he shook my old hand. My heart is in Ireland, it's there I long to be. Our hills and our valleys are calling to me. So born here in this land, my heart is in Ireland, the land of the old folk is calling to me. By a roadside cafe, a young girl came smiling and to me did say, well, my folks are from Ireland, me dad, he hopes one day when he leaves the mine, sure we'll go back to stay. My heart is in Ireland, it's there I long to be. Our hills and our valleys are calling to me. So born here in this land, my heart is in Ireland, the land of the old folk is calling to me.
And founder and they'd or one of the founders of the Wolf Tones, we're delighted to welcome as we head over to Dublin and to Brian Warfield, the composer.
Hello,
the host. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. We just had a great win there against Wales.
We're lucky to get you at all. Yeah.
No, it's all over and done with now, I tell you.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic game.
Nothing like crowing with, you know, a win like that. If you, you wouldn't know whether to feel bad for Wales and the Welsh team or not, but today wouldn't be the day to bring it up anyway. You're welcome and very welcome. And we know, can you bring us back to 1963, and Inchicore in Dublin, and you're getting a couple of musicians together to form what would be a Guinness Book of Records, absolutely amazing history in Irish music and traditional Irish music, and in developing the brand of the Wolf Tones.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it goes back a long time, as you know. But, I was very enthusiastic, and I was very enthusiastic about Irish music. I loved it. it was deep-seated in the family as well, because, like, my grandfather was a great entertainer and singer, and he loved the Irish song and the Irish music, and he was the one that instilled that love of music into me, at least. But, I always wanted to play it and sing it, and we went out across the flat hills in Ireland over the years, and we learned, we picked up songs, we learned music, and we kept developing and developing and developing. And at one stage, we got, I think it was about 1964, we got a manager from Norway. He was living in Ireland, and he had a business in Ireland doing those aerial view postcards for tourists to send around the place. And he became a manager, and soon after that, we got a record contract. And the record contract was for 5 years, five albums, and that was with Fontana Records in England at the time. They're a big company. And it was amazing that we got this fabulous contract. But we are probably one of the few in Ireland who got it at that stage. And, you know, there was the Tansy Brothers over in America, but indeed we were based in Ireland and one of the first to get a big contract. So that was a great start to the Wolf Tones. And then, of course, you know, we got recognized through our records and became very, 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 very famous around through our recordings. And I couldn't believe it when I got when we got over to New York in 1966, our first visit to America. And Dorothy Hayden, as you might remember, had a show there. And
she had D show, yeah.
I couldn't believe it. Yeah. And I couldn't believe that, you know, that people knew our music over in America, which they did. And we played the City Center, and we played out of Queens and all around the place back then. But it was a fabulous experience for us.
Yeah.
I fell in love with New York and New Yorkers, and I'm in love with them ever since.
Well, I think the feeling is mutual. I just, since you brought up Dorothy Hayden's name, now, she took over the tradition and the program of her father, Charlie Hayden, who initially had about the only Irish program in New York, and it was a program dedicated mostly, again, to the playing of music. But it wouldn't surprise me, you know, just arriving in New York and hearing the Wolf Tones, because I think there was a segment of our community, a big swath of our community, that liked the fact that your songs didn't just come out of nowhere, that they had that mix that other groups did not find comfortable, and that you brought, you know, you were known that time pretty much as the rebel band, you know, the leader of the rebel, at a time when music kind of over here anyway, didn't any of the rebel music, you know, was old. You brought a new and fresh, you know, rendition and composition, which brings us to, you know, it's now 60, almost 60 years later, and you still have, you know, the original members of the band, still around, like Brian, you know, yourself, Noel Nagel, and Tommy Byrne, the guts of the Wolf Tones. Go ahead.
Myself, Tommy and Noel have been great friends, you know, back from the earlier days. And, you know, my passion at least was to bring the story of Ireland across the world, which I have. And I think it's very important to tell the story in its entirety, because we have a great history and a wonderful background, and we've had wonderful leaders over the years, and they should be all remembered. So this year, it being the 175th year anniversary of the terrible hunger of 1847, I wanted to bring to the fore the story of that famine. And it wasn't a famine, as we all know. There was plenty of food in Ireland, enough to feed double its population. But it was taken away by gunpoint. And that's the, I think that's the sorrow about Ireland. We had enough food to feed us, but we had no control over it. So it was exported all across the world. I've written a song actually about this, about that particular event for the upcoming show. And it's the story of, you know, the ships. I call them the ships of shame. And that's the title of the song. And, so it was a shame that all this food was being exported, or Ireland was crying with hunger, bleeding with hunger, bleeding its people, our people dying one by one. But I put that all into a song in a kind of a in a way that you know, when you write a song, it's not like writing a book. You can give that much detail in it, so you have to be very, very concise about what you say and the way you say it.
Yeah,
because the way you say it will cover. We'll cover the, you know, the whole story and get people into the idea that what happened, and then hopefully it brings them on to a point where they read more about it. And I think that's the importance of the Wolf Tones. Like we've gone all over the world and gone to countries where, you know, little English would be spoken or anything like that, but they still get the whole, they get the whole story of the music through the passion. Through the way that it's sung, the way that it's presented. And, you know, we've gone to Norway, Sweden, we've gone to Denmark. We have one of the big festivals there in Skagen. And all around Germany, of course, Holland, Spain, Italy, and you name it, we've been there. But all the peoples of the world, I think, found and do find the Irish story very, very interesting. And everybody knows about the Irish story. Now, according to what I've read of Irish history, I don't regard my songs as rebel songs. I regard them as storytelling songs. Now, I wouldn't leave. I have another song that I have written for this show, and it's about John Mitchell. Now, John Mitchell was one of the leaders during the time of the Great Hunger. And as you know, you're sent first of all to Bermuda, a hulk in the harbour of Bermuda, and then they moved them on to the Cape, and after the Cape they moved them on to Tasmania. So there's a big story to tell here, and the story is just, I have a passion to tell this story.
Yeah.
And the show is like, for the first half of the show, it's all songs of that period. We will open up. I've written a kind of a long poem, which I put to music, and it tells the story of the particular time of 1847. And that story is, I think, when you hear it, you'll understand what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
It's a full story in poem.
You know, my guest is cutting over you there.
Yeah,
my guest, friends, is Brian Warfield, then founding member of the Wolf Tones, a composer, an Irish historian, an author, you know, a playwright. Your immersion in, you know, in music and song and storytelling, again, it isn't from the wind you took it, but how much information did you learn, say, in school, and this is not an idle question, about the famine when you were indeed growing up? To answer my question, it hasn't been answered. By the time I immigrated from Ireland, I didn't know a single thing about the famine at all.
Well,
wasn't brought up.
I did. I got a great school teacher in primary school, in fact, that gave me a great love of history. And he was one of the he is a great storyteller, a great historian. But he told me and told the class all about the famine. And he told us about all the amount of food that was exported. And he was one of the few people that put the population of Ireland at 10 million at that time.
Wow.
Because, you know, the census only recorded 8.175 million people. But, you know, it's not that, there was a recount in a couple of counties, one of them being County Louth, and they found a 10% discrepancy here. So if you apply that to the whole country, and it wouldn't be fair to do so, but because I think in the west of Ireland there would be more, because the new County Louth, a small county, very well. So could there be in 15 or more? So if you put that and the loss of people, like the loss of people that would have got married and had children and everything else, and the increase in population, you could put it at close to 10 million people. So, you know, I think in 10 years from 45 to 55, or 46 to 56, of 2.5 million people arrived in New York.
Yeah.
So that's a vast amount of people. And there's a vast amount of people lost, because the Devon Commission, which took place before the famine, said that almost practically 4 million people were on the verge of hunger every year. Come July, Hungry July, as they called it.
Yeah.
And there's no evidence to support the fact that those people were fed during those years.
Yeah.
So we can't say for certain what the death is.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but if you take, you know, songs like, you know, and you've had your own share of them, but take a song like The Fields of Athenry, and it brings us a bit closer to the reality of that. And you mentioned earlier, and your theme has been, you know, that this was not an act of God's. This was indeed a famine that shouldn't have happened. But you know, you were talking about can we get the numbers? Can we rely on the numbers? Well, if we were relying, you know, on the British, who had no problem at all in letting us starve to death, you know, and if they become the accountants, I don't know, you couldn't believe the Lord's Prayer from any of them. But
yeah, well, they were gloating at the fact, you know, that it was having such a devastation, such a devastation effect on Ireland, and they were gloating on the fact that, you know, I think it was said in the papers at the time that it was good to see that now there'll hardly it'd be like Manhattan in the USA, where you wouldn't find any Native Americans. And Ireland would be soon a place where you won't find a Celt, or won't find a Celt, to be all gone away.
Yeah.
So they were building on the fact from early stages that, you know, it's killing a lot of people, because they were quite worried about the fact that Ireland had a huge population at the time. And remember that I think England had only like 18 million, something like that, and America was only around about the same, about 20 million or so. So, like, it's a huge population and had a huge effect, you know, in America, particularly because that was the favorite place where everyone wanted to go. So the story I wanted to tell in this show about the fact is that it's a story of Irish America. It's a story of how people, you know, ended up there. And most of the time they ended up there voluntarily. They didn't want to leave Ireland. They loved Ireland. But it wasn't like today where people leave and they have a choice. They had no choice back then, either death or get out.
And many, thing. As we know, and indeed through your own stories in song, we know that getting on the coffin ship was indeed, when that becomes the lesser of two choices, or die on the side of the road, or take your whole family and huddle because you're going to die from starvation, you know, and from, you know, the scourge of the disease. You know, imagine being lucky enough to get on a coffin ship to go somewhere, you know, primarily to America. The depth of that, I think, it's no wonder for some of it. And, you know, you were talking about your teacher, your professor in Dublin. I don't think he would be reading any script, you know, from the curriculum there, because I know it definitely wasn't, not only was it not compulsory reading, but God between us and all harm, let's hide that fact as in fact, you know, we had the same to, you know, in the national schools anyway throughout Ireland, particularly in the west of Ireland. Two topics you didn't bother bringing up. One, definitely, geez, don't even think of bringing up the famine, you know, because you might be offending the neighbors or the, you know, the guilt associated with survival and all the rest of it. And, of course, the next one, you know, would be, you know, the 1916, the songs that about Ireland's, you know, becoming a divided nation, but with, you know, at that was a stay away from that too while you're at it. So, in our national school system, and I have to be careful here, bite my tongue, because my father and mother were school teachers in the national school in Ireland. But somehow, when we came to Ireland's history and we came up to 1916 or 1915, now that'll be close enough to go in now with you. It's again a tribute to the Wolf Tones, I think, to take and to weave into their music and song, you know, because otherwise there, it could, you know, those events have been relegated to the ash heap, and you have to come and drag them out and actually make sure that you do that in an entertaining fashion, rather than, you know, rely on those who might pick out a book from the library.
Yeah, well, it has to be entertaining, of course. And, you know, like, since you'd be amazed at the amount of young people that come to our shows in Ireland, in Scotland, in Wales. Like, we go to shows in the Barrow Lounge in Glasgow, and there'd be over 2,500 people there. All young kids, you probably wouldn't find any over 25.
Wow.
But they love the Irish story, and I think one of the reasons that they love the Wolf Tones is that we tell the story, but don't get it anywhere else. It's somewhat banned around the place.
Yeah.
No, don't tell that story. I remember Luke Dudley Edwards, who is now official unionist, she said last week, but she said she came up to one of our shows in England, in London, in fact, and there was about 3,000 people at the National in London. And she came up, she asked to see me. And I received her gracefully and everything else, bought her a drink. And she said, she turned around, she said to me, "You should be ashamed of yourself," she said, "riling up all them people in this hall, all young people." And she said, I said, "Hold on, Ruth. You wrote a story about Padraig Pearse, and if I was Padraig Pearse, I'd come back and haunt you, because you never told the truth. You focused on everything you could find negative about the man." And that's the kind of woman she was. Now, when the famine memorial came around, she tried to... She got a lot of press. She got a lot of radio play and radio time and everything else. But her focus was... Famine was nothing. The focus was, that's just the way it was back then.
Yeah.
Now, they wouldn't let another opinion counteract that, you know what I mean? So I wanted to counteract that and say, look, hold on, you're not telling the truth to the Irish people here. They were trying to subdue passion of the Irish people against
it. Absolutely.
The Irish people are strong and mature enough to understand their history. And it should never be denied, because we're not stupid people. And we can take it as adults. We know that it was terrible scene and everything else. But I'm not going to go out and shoot somebody in this generation for what generations ago did. But I do like to hear an apology. I do like to understand. I've got cousins in England, as probably everybody has. But, you know, and my cousin in England said, oh, my granddaughter is going to Liverpool University, and she's studying history, and she's studying Irish history. And she told me the other day, she said, there was no famine and the amount of food was taken away. Now, many people in England don't know that, but it was just that she went to take a degree in history, and somehow Liverpool is stronger in the Irish story than other universities. So numerous people in England were shocked in England when a program came on that said that, you know, that health and the famine in Ireland would put the Irish people during that awful potato. And writing in the papers and getting on the internet.
You know,
and
Brian, I Brian Warfield, my guest friends, the Wolf Tones, kind of very limited in concert engagements here. With, of course, as you can imagine, they will play a couple of nights in Boston. But I want to get, before we give the hard sell here for tickets, I wouldn't want people, much as, you know, I have a personal stake in, you know, in your bringing on this 175th anniversary, the story of the famine in song. We wouldn't want to leave, you know, our listeners or anybody for that matter, with the impression that, you know, that's what the entire concert is about. Because there are people, you know, you have a, whether you know it or not, you have a pusher, an agent over here, Ed Redburn. And, you know, we love the fact that the Wolf Tones, to many of us, indeed known as the Tones, you have your concert will be more of what you've done for the last 60 years. It will be a great variety of songs.
Oh, absolutely.
Many of which the Wolf Tones have not only taken the lead, but your compositions, all of it is terrific. So we're talking about intermission, and then on the second half of your program, just give us an idea of, you know, so many songs and, you know, hits throughout the world with your songs. How do you pick the next batch for your concerts?
Yeah, the way I look at it now, I'd like to do all the great hits of the Wolf Tones over the years. And they're the ones that, you know, we're probably known for. Now, some of the first half will contain some of those songs, because they're very relevant to a whole situation. So the first part won't be all unknown songs. There will be songs, you know, that you know very well, like,
right,
you know, things like, you know, Hibernia, which has become a great hit. You'll Never Beat the Irish. You know, things like Irish Eyes and songs like that.
So
we have a song then finishing off the first part. It's Thank God for America. Then we'll be starting off the second part with God Save Ireland. And then we'll be moving on to things like Graves and, you know, songs like Stealth Symphony, songs like Nation Once Again, We're on the Road. You know, all those great songs that we've had over the years.
Right.
So the concert will be roughly about 2.5 hours. The first part will be 1.25 hours, and the second half will be roughly the same. So it's accompanied by a slideshow. And the slideshow brings the whole song to history.
Yeah.
And the thing will have vocals from the period of time. Like, it'll be illustrated.
A tremendous addition,
like
and something I think that, much as we love and admire the Wolftones, not only for, but taking songs again, like you mentioned there, On the One Road, and so forth. When we hear that song, it is so associated with the Wolftones that we have to assume that some of these songs that you've taken out of the tea chest, out of the barrel, where you know everybody said, "Well, that's enough of that one." You've taken and made those covers, as it were, in your music. So a lot of people will not associate songs like On the One Road as being, a song, a classic, until you hear the version of the Wolftones. And we could talk for the next hour, and I still wouldn't be able to cover the success. But all I know is that we are looking forward very much to your coming to New York, and also to commemorate the 175th anniversary of the Irish Hunger, the Great Irish Hunger on Gortza Moor. And I have more than a passing interest in that, because when you come to New York, and for those who come into New York City, the Irish Famine Memorial in Battery Park City, you know, again is a very popular spot, a recreation of a famine house, a famine field, you know, the ruins as they are today. And it comes from my home parish of Attymass. Brian,
that's good. Amazing.
Yeah, and thank you. But again, Ed Radburn now was wondering when we're getting around to selling tickets. Never mind this, but that's the way he is. He can get cranky after a bit. March 15th. Yeah. He's a lovely fella, but, you know, he'd cut you off in a minute and say, "How many tickets are you guys selling there now?" Okay, it's March 15th and 16th. The Wolftones, friends, two and only two performances in New York City to mark again the 175th anniversary of the Great Irish Famine, a tribute concert at Town Hall. Book your concert date now, and because this is going to be a sellout. So, Town Hall is located smack in the middle of Manhattan at 43rd Street, and between 6th and Broadway. The Town Hall, you can get your tickets by, go to the Town Hall website, that's townhallnyc.org, or Ticketmaster, and Ticketmaster, of course, is Ticketmaster.com. Enjoy Ireland's prolific and legendary balladeers, the Wolftones, and I'm speaking to himself, Brian Warfield. Look forward to having you.
Listen, Adrian. Yeah. I'm looking forward to meeting other friends again once again. Over the years, I've made some wonderful friends all around the tri-state area.
Sure.
And I'm really looking forward to performing once again for all of them. It's been locked down for the last 2 years, so we had to get out of New York fast the last time we were there.
Right.
So, I look forward to that. And I had emails from people who were coming up from, Florida for the show. And, they said, oh, we're really looking forward to the show. So
yeah.
People are coming from all over, you know.
Yeah, groupies.
We have one other show in Boston, and that's at the Strand Theater. And the Strand Theater is a beautiful old theater. The Town Hall is a fantastic theater as well.
Yeah.
We played it, I think the last time we played for the Irish immigrants, and we were trying to get green cards, remember, at the time. And I think we gave it all to them, with a charity do for them. But, the Town Hall was fantastic. We played it many times, great atmosphere. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to that great Irish audience and New York audience. From anywhere around, you're all very, very welcome. And I guarantee you get a great show.
Yeah, it's great. And as I say, you had a lot of mileage on you by the time I started my radio show in 1970, but I remember that fairly early in my programs. I played a lot of Wolf Tone's music, and then lo and behold, one time you were in New York and came to the studio, and I was
smacked. Yeah, I remember.
Great. And you're welcome back, of course. Okay, Brian. Okay, God bless. Okay, we got cut off there, but maybe I'd say that friggin' Redburn had, you know, something to do with that. Listen, friends, we're at the end of a program, and I think it's probably appropriate enough to end with, or to see our way out with the Wolf Tones and their song, which they made famous, is still famous today, of course, Irish Eyes. And forgive me for talking over this, but we would like to, again, friends, I can't tell you, how much we're looking forward to the Wolf Tones at Town Hall. Again, it's the 15th and 16th. Ticketmaster.com or Town Hall. Now, we are, again, friends, very happy to meet, even on radio, and to welcome this dynamite young writer, playwright from Dublin, now a New Yorker, and delighted with her American citizenship, but the play, Made by God, again, loosely based on the story of Anne Lovett, the 15-year-old schoolgirl from Granard in County Longford, who died giving birth to 15-year-old, she and her baby son, dying on the steps of the grotto. But a horrific story, and it will be, again, interesting to get to see. This is a world premiere taking place at the Irish Repertory Theatre in the heart of Chelsea in New York. Tourism Ireland, the place to go if you're planning a trip to Ireland. And even if you're not planning a trip to Ireland, you'll get more out of the website Tourism Ireland than you will just about anywhere else. And it's all up to date. That's Tourism Ireland. And remember, friends, that tours of Ireland are very much back. The coach tours and indeed way beyond the coach tours, wouldn't be a bad idea anyway to link up with CIE.com, because they have a lot of other services as well. They'll help you out. It is absolutely, it's great. Ireland is not only is it coming back, but it's reaching out to all of us, particularly in North America, and we're responding. Of course we are. Okay. So long. God bless, friends. You know, on behalf of Vonnie Sheridan, who puts everything together here, even myself when I'm a bit scattered, to all of you, enjoy whatever you're doing, and if it doesn't suit you, well then, let's hope it gets better along the way. Again, friends, thanks. Anytime, no matter where you are in the world, you can catch up with us if you log on to irishradio.com. All of our interviews are live and archived. So long. God bless you. And thank you for listening to The Flannelly Show, live from New York.
Irish eyes.